Hello, and welcome to the Week 9 edition of our statewide high school football podcast. I'm Northwest Herald sports editor Kyle Neighbors. You can find me on Twitter at Kyle Neighbors. And I'm joined once again by Northwest Herald sports reporter Joe Stevenson. You can find him on Twitter at NWH underscore Joe Prep Zone. And, of course, our statewide high school football expert here at Shaw Media, Steve Soucy. You can find him on Twitter at the Seuss. And before we dive into the potential playoff field, I'd like to quickly mention that you can catch Seuss on the IHSA football playoff pairing show starting at 8 p.m. Saturday on NBC Sports Chicago Plus. And our own Joe Stevenson will also be on there, won't you, Joe?
I will. I will be on the panel for 5A through 8A.
Should be a good time. Hopefully the weather holds up on Friday and Saturday. We don't have any craziness like we did this past weekend. Which, speaking of which, Seuss, you got much sleep over the last couple of days?
Well, actually, the weather actually kind of accommodated a little bit more sleep, because with so many games being moved off of Saturday into Sunday and Monday, there wasn't as much as I usually do available for me to do on Saturday. So I kind of spread it out a little bit more over an extra day. So for a change, I actually got a little bit more rest than usual.
So I'm looking through your projections that you were able to get finished here now that everything's done. You said, as of now, there are 18 projected to finish with five and four records and 39 points. Can you go through a little bit what you're seeing here?
Well, when it comes down to it, it looks like the point line's probably going to break at 38. So when you're looking at all those teams in the 39 group, it's important to look at those as well, because if one thing happens with a team in that group where they end up not getting a point that I expect them to get, then they fall down into that group of teams at 38 that, at least at this stage, looks like they have to go through a second stage tiebreaker to decide who gets into the field and who doesn't. So if you don't get to 39 and I'm expecting you to, then you have to take a closer look at those teams, because if the point break falls on 38 and there's tiebreakers involved in that, then you have to start looking at second and third stage tiebreakers to see if that team actually still gets into the field. So that's why you're looking at the 39-point teams as well as the 38-point teams, because if something happens where you don't get that one point, it can be really, really costly to your playoff aspirations.
Okay, Steve, Kyle and I were talking about this before, and I was trying to remember how it goes. What are the first, second, third tiebreakers and so forth?
Well,
I know, like, the last one's a coin flip, and that would kind of stink. That'd be like driving out in the middle of nowhere in Friday Night Lights and flipping your lucky coin, but you don't want to do that.
Yeah, in setting the field, I mean, obviously the first thing that we're talking about is playoff points, where we're looking at there's going to be a tie for that when we're discussing who gets in for that last spot. When you talk about how they do this, it gets to be a little bit confusing if you don't know how it all works, because the way that they seed, there's actually a different tiebreaker than the way that they figure out who actually gets into the field. So you have to figure out the two things, you know, intermittently. The first one is obviously the playoff points. The second one is the playoff points of the teams that you beat. So that's where usually most of the ties are broken. So you go from that situation, you figure it out there. So if you're a 5-4 team, you take out the four playoff points amassed by the teams that beat you, and then usually that breaks the tie. If that doesn't happen, then you got to go even farther down the list. You have to go to the number of teams that you played that made the playoffs. Then you have to go to the number of wins by teams played that qualified for the playoffs. So it goes on and on and on. Then they put this one in 2 years ago to try to get away from the coin flip. Points allowed in games against teams that qualified for the playoffs. So if you're tied in all of those games and then get to that point where you have to worry about the points allowed in games against teams that qualified for the playoffs, and you're still tied then, well, I actually can't blame the state for going to a coin flip at that point.
It seems like I think the IHSA does a really good job with most of this, and it seems like it's about as fair as it can be, would you say?
I think so. I mean, if they gave me carte blanche to change some things, there's really only a few things that I would change, because the one thing that I don't necessarily like about the system is, you know, all wins aren't the same. I don't know how you would fix it to accommodate that, but, you know, certain wins are a lot more meaningful than other wins. So I kind of wish that actually they used the second stage of the playoffs to decide seedings, the number of wins of the teams that you actually beat, because I think that says a little bit more than just the raw playoff points. Because you can play a couple of 9-0 teams, but if you lost to both of them by running clock, how much does that really tell about the quality of your team?
So, really quickly, we should mention here that we're starting something new this week. We have a Steve Soucy newsletter that's going to be going out here. What you need to do, you can sign up in a couple places. You can go to your Google machine and type in Northwest Herald newsletters. Click the link. You can sign up for the state football newsletter. While you're there, you might as well sign up for Ask Joe and our prep football newsletter. All three are great content that are exclusive to the newsletter each week. Or you can go over to our Facebook or jump on your Facebook, that is, and join the 2017 Illinois State Football Championships group. We should have the first one coming out here pretty soon, right, Steve?
I sure hope so.
So I guess Marion Central definitely threw a wrench into your plans this week with them picking up a fourth win and probably now joining the playoff field here this week. What other games really kind of changed the way this thing looked?
Well, I mean, there were quite a few, but when it really came down to it, that was one that comes from a very short list of teams that kind of punched their way into the field this week. And it was different in a lot of ways this week than it usually is. Like, usually I'll have three or four teams per class that, like, changed. I had to check it three times. My projection from Class 6A last week, no teams changed in the field, and that's really weird for this late in the season. So, I mean, you had a couple of other games out there where, you know, the things kind of changed the way that we set up who got in. But ultimately, what it came down to was that was one of a very small list of games this week that actually said, okay, this gets you in. There was another game in Southern Illinois involving Red Bud that was a little bit unexpected. But there was really only two games where the outcome of the game said, okay, a spot needed to be created for this team in the projection solely because of that victory. So, Marion Central Catholic, along with Red Bud, were kind of unique this week in regards to how the projection looked. I'm sure that'll change this week. It always does. Week 9 tends to bring out the crazy in some of these teams. So, but this week it was actually really, really calm in regards to, teams kind of upsetting the apple cart.
So, Steve, one team that everybody's going to be looking at, come Saturday is Glenbard West, where it falls, because it's right now projected as the largest 7A. Last year it was an 8A, and it did some damage in 8A. Which are some of the teams that are likely to move up or down that are notable?
Well, when you look at who's on the bubble right now, the teams are the same. Like you just mentioned one of them right there. Glenbard West is always a team that's kind of hovering between 8 and 7A. I mean, when you look at the bubble now for that class as well, Edwardsville is another team that you have to monitor in regards to whether maybe they could slide into 7A. A team that I've been watching all season long in regards to this bubble, and it looks like they may be settling into 5A as Lamont. They've been hovering on that brink. They're obviously a team that's done some good things in both of those two classes in the past, so it's always interesting to see where they fall. I'm a little bit more confident now that Morris is going to land in 4A, which probably isn't good for the teams in 4A. But the bubbles are interesting this year as it seems like a lot of, I guess, some of the power teams that usually maybe fall a class up are falling a class down. I mean, Willowbrook and Hoffman Estates in 6A is another situation that if you would have asked me in week 3 or week 4, I would have said, nah, those are probably 7A teams. So it's been interesting in that sense because you have to look at these teams, as to where they're landing. I think the biggest factor that's coming into play here in regards to teams ending up in classes is we've got a lot of newbies in 7A. We've got a lot of teams that you are not accustomed to seeing in this playoff field, and that's changing all of these bubbles all the way down, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1, because when you're making room for teams like Buffalo Grove, who hasn't been in the playoffs in nearly 15 years, Rockford East is another that's been out for a long time, Alton.
Andrew?
These are teams that have not been in the playoffs for a very long time. And when you're doing this before the year, you kind of look at it and you say, these are the 32 teams that are most likely to get in. When you have a whole bunch of new teams clustering all in the same class, and that's what's happening in 7A, then this is what happens. You start getting some teams that usually are riding the bubble between two classes falling in the smaller of the classes because of this.
So as you were talking about 4A and Moore's probably falling into that there, which team is closest to that north-south line? Is it Hersher or Kewaunee?
Hersher is the team that keeps bouncing back and forth and based on the projections. The thing about Kewaunee is they keep bouncing back and forth between 3 and 4A. So, you know, it's going to be interesting when you look at it. And like I said, sometimes you draw it on the map. I think Hersher would be the team that would move south if we had to move a team south in that scenario. But right now, both of them are north. But that also hinges heavily on who ends up getting into the back end of the class on both sides, because if a Southern team sneaks into that 4A draw that I don't currently have in there, then it would basically force one of the teams from the south up into the north bracket to fill the vacancy and so forth. So that line in 4A has been the hardest one to peg, because as far as a geographic thing goes, there seems to be a whole bunch of teams that are kind of clustered right around being 15, 16 north and 1-2 south.
Steve, you talked before about the last game of the season and a 4-4 team, a desperate 4-4 team playing its tail off to get in. Who might be a candidate or two to see that from this week?
Well, there are quite a few of those, and I mean, there are several teams that like that have a situation that, like, the ones that I've been looking at predominantly are Glenbard North. They're playing Neuqua Valley this week, and the interesting thing about that game is that Neuqua Valley currently has a 5-3 record, but they're not in. If they lose that game, they're out on points. So that's actually more of a 4-on-4 game right there. Waubonsie Valley is another one. I'm not completely counting out Geneva. And now I think you have to look at, after what happened last week, I think you have to look at that Libertyville-Zion-Benton game as another one, because Zion-Benton surprising Warren, a team I really like last week, to keep themselves eligible. There's no reason in my mind that if that team can beat Warren, they can beat Libertyville too. So they're right in the thick of it. It should be interesting to see how that all ferrets out. But there are some teams that are sitting right there that are on that 4-4 bubble. The one that's most interesting to me, just from a historical standpoint, is Geneseo's made 40-plus consecutive playoff appearances. They're the active leader in consecutive playoff appearances since the system began. They are playing Morris this week, and they have to win. So that's a really interesting one for me to watch, just from, like I said, a historical standpoint. It's extraordinarily rare for Geneseo to not be in this field, and if they don't get that win over Morris on Friday night, they won't be.
All right, just kind of running through some of your projections here, Seuss, one that stick out to me, and one of the first ones I see is in 7A, number 27, Mount Carmel, at number 6, Glenbard West. You having trouble pegging Mount Carmel at this point?
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about coin flips before. I think there are a couple of teams where I think I might just be better off flipping coins than trying to guess whether or not they win or lose games, because they've been kind of a perplexing team all year long. That De La Salle loss and loss in week 7 really kind of threw me and almost threw me off their scent. I wasn't really sure what to make of them after that point. And then they didn't really have any trouble last week picking up that win. So I think they're just kind of a roller coaster team that's tough to figure out. So moving forward, I think, you know, I think they'll lose this week, but I don't know at this point. I mean, they could win that game and improve their status. They're playing a hot Providence team this week, so you know, I don't know what's going to happen in that game. So they could improve their seed quite a bit by picking off Providence. That's a situation for them. The interesting thing about that matchup that you just mentioned is if you look at where Glenbard West would be if they would have stayed in 8 against where they'll be if they finish in 7 and my projections are right, I'm not so sure Glenn Bard West wouldn't sign up for 8A, to be honest with you, because it's the path for them in 7A is pretty difficult.
So in 8A, who would they have had in the first round, do you think?
They would have been an 8 seed in the 8A projection.
Okay.
I looked at that this morning. So, I mean, I look at that and I look at where they're at, and I would have said, you know, if I'm them and you gave me my choice, I think I might have taken 8A.
And then how about in 6A here? We have the defending 5A champ, Peoria. They won 5A, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Just making sure. You have the defending 5A champ, Peoria, in 6A. They've been kind of up and down, scoring a ton of points just like last year. You have them as the number 14 seed in the South bracket, but Shepherd doesn't particularly scare me. Is Peoria a team, given the way they play, the style of football that they play, that can put together a run?
I think they are. I think the one thing that you have to keep in mind about Peoria is Caron Taylor, their standout quarterback who's going to Illinois, has been injured quite a bit this year. So that's kind of affected their ability to be the wrecking ball that they've been offensively consistently throughout the entire year. So it's interesting in that sense. I mean, he should be able to go this week. They should be fine. They've got a 3-5 Galesburg team this week. If they somehow didn't win that game, they wouldn't make the playoffs because they don't have very good playoff points. So that's one thing to just kind of keep an eye on with them. But I think based on that bracket, if my projection holds, it makes for a potential very interesting second round game between Peoria and Sacred Heart Griffin. So that would be something that I'd be very interested in seeing it. Like I said, if the projection holds out, it's a very strange 6A South bracket. Where there's a lot of underseeds in that group that I actually like a lot. So, I mean, it's one of those situations where I think you could get some underseeds running deep there. I like Providence a lot. I have them at a 10 seed right now. It could be a pretty interesting bracket there. And I like Crete a lot at the top of that bracket. So it could be kind of a chaotic mess there at the bottom half of 6.
Going down to 3A, looking through... Can you give me a bit of a scouting report on Mantino? Because this was a team that I thought was going to be down this year, but here you have them in the projections here. Once again, Mantino looking like a team that's headed back.
Well, yeah, I think they're a very interesting team, and the thing about them is that for the first 4 to 5 weeks of the season, they didn't really know what they were doing at the quarterback position, and you know as well as I do for a long time. Mantino coach R.J. Haynes has always had really good quarterbacks, and he's never one to hesitate throwing the football. So they didn't really have that to start the season. They actually had a disciplinary issue that caused them to shake up their lineup a little bit and put a junior by the name of Shane Warren under center. And he has taken to that position like nobody's business. And Coach Haynes has got his toys back. So He's passing the ball all over the field again like he likes to do, and they're an interesting team. They're playing really well defensively, and now with Warren kind of giving that offense a little bit of flexibility, they're the kind of team that if I drew them on pairings night, I wouldn't be all that thrilled about it.
Down in 2A, I feel like we should give a shout-out really quick to Clifton Central coach Brian Spooner. Has his team playing well again? You have them as a number 5 seed. Is that a good draw for them?
I think it is. They have played really well since the beginning of the year, like you said. Funny aside that one of their fans mentioned, I saw it on a thread somewhere, they were astonished that Central could win this many games in a row based on the fact that Coach Spooner runs a Tecmo Bowl offense. So... you know, that made me laugh because he claims that he passes more, but Colin Crumwhitey has broken every school record they have down there for running backs this year. So they run the ball a lot. I think this is a very interesting draw as I have it drawn out. They would be on the same side as where I feel like the power of that bracket resides, but. It's definitely one where I think the Comets can maybe make some noise.
All right, before we get out of here, Seuss, we already touched on a few of them, but what games do you see having the biggest impact on the playoff field?
Well, there's so few of those you know win and get in type of games this week that you have to start looking. You have to start looking deeper at the games. We discussed some of those. There's a couple in the DuPage Valley. Waubonsie Valley is a team that I'm keeping an eye on at 4-4. If they could pick off that win against Wheaton North, that's going to cause some upheaval. You just have a bunch out there with these 4-4 teams. There's so many of them out there, and that's the hardest thing to do is to kind of pinpoint exactly where they're at. The weird thing, and this is always something that kind of confuses people that don't really understand the system as well, as there are four teams competing for two spots in one of the Chicago Public League Chicago divisions, and we honestly won't know the playoff field until probably 4 o'clock on Saturday, which is late because there's a game at 1 o'clock on Saturday that is being played between Urban Prep West and Orr, that it depends on who wins, and it may depend on how many points are scored in the game to decide which one of these two teams goes. And it's important because Urban Prep West is a 3A school if they get in. Orr is a 2A school. So if Orr makes it, then it changes the line for 2-3. If West changes it, it changes the line the other way. So the teams that are hovering on the 2-3A bubble, we'll have to wait until the last minute to know which class they're in. That's how weird some of the layers of this that factor in. But there are a ton. Like I said, there are always 4-4 teams that rise up. Last year there were 12 of them. 4-4 teams that were playing teams that had better records than them that won on that final week of the season. I don't think there's going to be that many this year. There's just simply mathematically that it's very, very difficult for that to happen. But there were 12 of them last year that caused the field to turn over in a lot of different ways. So until we get down into the nitty gritty, what you just basically need to do is you need to watch the 4-4s on Friday night. All of those teams have a big deciding factor, not only on who gets into the field, but where those class lines break.
Okay, that'll wrap it up for us here in week 9. It's going to be a crazy, crazy few days, guys. Look forward to seeing you guys both on the Comcast. What is it now? What did I say?
NBC Chicago.
That's what it is now. They're screwing with us. Yep. Look forward to seeing you guys on the show Saturday night, and we'll talk to you next week.